Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I thank you for joining us. In the studio with me today, it says here former Crystal Palace striker. What would you want on your tombstone, James Scowcroft? Would you want Crystal Palace? You'd want Ipswich, wouldn't you? If there's only room for
it's
one.
It's a question I've never been asked before. I'll probably never be asked again. I've never thought about.
There must be one club you identify with more. It's probably not Palace. It's Ipswich, no?
Maybe.
Always so decisive. And down the line, what's better than a Scowcroft? Why, of course, a Northcroft. It's Jonathan Northrop from the Sunday Times. I don't need to ask you what club you identify with most because I think everybody knows, right?
Well, this is it. On my tombstone, I did a week's work experience for the Aberdeen Evening Express once. So former Aberdeen Evening Express work experience. That's what I'm having.
There you go. Now, later on, we're going to be discussing the shock resignation of Mr. Buvac and looking ahead at the relegation run-in. But first, let's start with Arsene Wenger's final visit to Old Trafford as Arsenal manager, barring any twists in the tale, of course. John, I'm going to start with you. Somebody pointed out to me that Wenger was going to get a better send-off at Old Trafford than he was at the Emirates, which seemed a little bit over the top, but he certainly got a good one with his old pals, Sir Alex and Jose Mourinho being gracious. That was never really in doubt, though, no, right? Knowing the personality of those two guys?
No. I mean, it was in some ways better than the game itself. I've actually rerun the send-off and just been fascinated by it so much in the body language. I mean, I loved Wenger giving Fergie his sort of French hug, and you know, even though Fergie's trying to be genial, trying to give an old Scottish man a French hug never really works very well. It's just a flinch that occurs when he does it, and then Fergie trying to get Mourinho to come and join them, and then it's a horribly awkward moment, and it's wonderful. But anyway, Wenger deserved that. Of course, he deserved that send off because I mean, my probably abiding memory of reporting on his teams would be them winning the league, Arsenal winning the league at Old Trafford in 2002, and they just seemed such a strong, mentally strong team, you know, brilliant on the pitch, but just really tough, mentally strong team that could do anything, even in the league at Old Trafford, which, you know, United were three times in a row champions at that point. And it's sad because, you know, you now look at him losing yet another game at Old Trafford where he hasn't won probably since 2002 or whatever, and it comes back the old thing that there's two Wengers.
You played against that Arsenal side, and obviously people make comparisons and stuff with the president. It's hard for people to understand, and I'm going to make you feel really old now because it was 16 years ago, and I think I'm not outing anybody. You're also a United fan. Were you playing at the time, or were you watching the game when Arsenal won the league at Old Trafford? Is it one of your scars of your youth?
I remember the game quite well. I watched it on TV.
Were you at Ipswich at the time?
I was at Leicester at the time. Actually played against the Invincibles last day of the season at Highbury when they got the when they won the league. And
how'd you do?
We were 1-0 up with 20 minutes to go, and Arsenal came back and 1-2-1. I was working yesterday at West Ham, Manchester City, and got asked a question, who was better, that team or the Man City side? And I would have to say the Arsenal side, I think, were better. I think
really?
All-rounded, yeah. I think Jonathan Mates a very good point. Mentally, they were very, very strong, very tough.
All right, enough with the nostalgia. Wenger clearly making a statement about moving forward as well. And also, he's got the small matter of Europa League semi-final coming up. He played a bunch of youngsters. The kid Mavropanos. Scotty, when you play against a team where the other side are resting players, chucking the kids out, is it a different experience? On the one hand, I guess the kids are more motivated, maybe fresher legs. On the other hand, they maybe lack experience. What would the experience have been like for the United players?
I think certainly when you play against teams like that, you go through the motions as well, and I think it can be an imbalance. It doesn't have the same edge to it like a normal league game. I think United have second spot now. Arsenal, the league is second to them now. They've got a huge game on Thursday night. So I actually think the mentality, the approach of both sides was the reason why we had the game. It was almost like a pre-season friendly that we see across the pond in America, isn't it? It just had... There have been so many great Manchester United-Arsenal games down the years, but that certainly wasn't one yesterday.
Johnny, did you learn anything about United from this game?
No, not really. I mean, it was... They weren't fantastic to watch, but they were efficient in the end. I mean, there was a thought that 1-0 they might go on and really thump Arsenal because they were such a young side. And we remember that 8-2 game where it was a similar thing. But they're not built that way. We saw they're not built that way. I think the most significant United thing was really Lukaku's injury, because so much of the game plan is based around him. I think he's actually had a really good season. And I would think that's a huge concern ahead of the FA Cup final. I think that's second place secured for United now, really. So it's about that FA Cup final.
As far as Mourinho's concerned, I think even his biggest critics would come out and say, well, he's a pragmatist. You know, he's not wedded to a style of play or a player. So you lose your big, strong target man, and then you got to go with somebody who's maybe quicker, more of a front-to-goal player. That's fine. He'll figure out a combination to make it work with Rashford or your pal Martial, right?
I think it's a blow. I wouldn't think it's the end of the world. I think United have different options, and those options can give Manchester United something certainly that Lukaku doesn't give in the big games, really. So I think Lukaku will be fine for the final. I don't think it's a...
Thank you, Dr. Scowcroft. Assuming he's not. Right, we don't know right now. There's a doubt.
If he's not, you've got two of the best young centre forwards in Europe.
I understand that, but how are they going to play? How are the? Because obviously they're very good, but they're different from Lukaku, right? So how do you think that's going to affect the way they play?
I think he'll just bring Rashford straight in. Play the Zet the same way, just play with Rashford.
And lump balls to Rashford instead of to Lukaku.
Well,
okay.
No, you've been very disrespectful now to a team that doesn't lump balls, a long pass. If you lump balls to Rashford, I'll tell you one thing you will get, you'll stretch Chelsea because the pace the lad has will cause Rashford, Chelsea...
Yeah, and obviously Lukaku has pace too, and he's
not the same pace.
Obviously not, no, but what I'm saying is, I know, maybe you take this for granted because you played that position, right? And I would assume the way a team plays, the movement that Lukaku does versus Rashford is different. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit how that changes.
One comes to the ball, one goes away from the ball.
Exactly.
So being the mindset of the Chelsea defence, so you're playing against Lukaku, who's a very, very difficult player to hang. He's very strong, gets his body in between the line of the ball and the player as well as anybody does in the Premier League. But if he's on the halfway line and he's winning the ball, not really going to hurt you. He's not really going to... And you can pressure his first touch. Like he got injured yesterday, this is the same way. You can pressure Lukaku's first touch. With Rashford, it is a different example. Okay, you cannot get as tight to him as maybe you can with Lukaku, because any space in behind, this lad's as quick as anything in the Premier League. You know my thoughts on Anthony Martial. I would play him down the middle. I think the kid has got everything in the next 10 years to be whatever he wants to be. Who would you rather, Lukaku in or out?
I think if you play Rashford and you're so terrified by Rashford's pace, then there's always then the stretching thing. Then the risk is then the other team's like, okay, fine, look, you have the Roadrunner up there, and we'll just sit very, very deep,
and then there'll be Sanchez no space down behind. The middle?
I'd be intrigued by that. I wonder if he's gonna do that, especially against sort of a, if you have a mass defense, then, you know, maybe there's a way to play where you unlock them. Maybe you even bring Mata back into the fold. Obviously not a center forward. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, we have some time to go. I'd say that's enough, United. But I just want to get Johnny quickly, just because we haven't had you on over the change at Arsenal. There was a question I was keen to ask you. At Arsenal, you've got two recruitment brains right now, right? One of them, Ralston Lehi, spent most of his career at Barcelona. The other one, Sven Mislintat, spent a lot of his career in Germany. Different footballing cultures, different visions. All right, the chief executive is, of course, South African and American. That's a different issue. I'm just wondering, in terms of the hunt for the next manager, if you get a German guy or a Spanish guy, is it going to tip the balance one way? Are they perhaps more likely to say, hey, you know what? We'll get a French guy or an Italian guy, or dare I even say Eddie Howe, just so that there's almost like a division of power and sort of that creative tension's going to make us better? Or do you have any, I mean, I'm not so much the name of the manager, but do you have, it's a very unusual dynamic, isn't it, at a football club?
It is, and you know, there's a power vacuum now where without Wenger, and we're waiting to see who's going to flood it and what the pecking order is going to be. And on top of Mislintat and Sanlehi, there is the fact that Gazidis, from what I can see, also wants to be something of a chief executive that makes football decisions, a bit of a, not quite a director of football, but he wants to stray into that territory too. So I think he wants his imprint on it. He wants his imprint on the future. And then we've got the owner's son who's starting to get more involved, and yeah, so may have his thoughts. I think it's a really interesting point in time for Arsenal because of all those factors, and because, you know, the lesson of Manchester United is not knowing what they wanted the identity to be post Fergie, and Arsenal may face that problem if they don't sort of sort this pecking order out. And what I heard at the sort of Gazidis press conference after Wenger left was him describing a lot of Arsene Wenger's key traits, and on the one breath saying we want all these traits in the next manager, but on the other breath saying we can't replace Wenger. So I think there's already a confusion to me, and I don't know who's going to win it. I don't know who's going to win out in that power struggle.
Now, this season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, and the FA Cup as well. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. And what excites me even more than that is that you get our excellent content. You also get The Sunday Times, where you get Jonathan Northcroft and some other guys, too. So, your favorite goal of the weekend in the Premier League. James, I'm expecting something really connoisseur, since you played at a far higher level than any of us.
I've gone for Wilfried Zaha's first goal for Crystal Palace at the weekend. Their fine win against another former club, Leicester City, who were very poor. It was a wonderful team move, and it was a good goal by Zaha, who was excellent on the day and has been excellent in recent weeks.
Johnny, your choice?
Well, I've gone for Fellaini's sort of elbowy, scruffy, but actually quite magnificent header against against Arsenal. I mean, not only was it a really good finish in its way, but I just thought it summed up so much about why we love football, because there was Wenger with this great send-off. You know, he was on the brink of engineering a really good result with his young team at Old Trafford. Perfect storyline, and then the least Wengerish player in the whole world scores the least Wengerish goal in the whole world. And it only happens in football. It's why football is kind of cruel, but it's wonderful. It's why unscripted drama is better than scripted drama. It just kind of summed up, and the fact that Arsene Wenger wants to continue in this sort of cruel game shows just how we get addicted to it, I guess. Even when things like that happen to you and you're 68, you still want to continue.
Enough United. Let's talk about the champions. I know you love talking about this, and you were even at the game, Scoey. Manchester City going to West Ham, pummeling them 4-1. They're on their way to break all sorts of records this year. Scoey, you were there. I got the impression, watching on television, two things stood out. One is West Ham are really kind of a disjointed bunch, and as much as I love Moyes, I don't need to see Evra at his age in the back three. And or rather, if he's in a situation where he feels compelled to do that, then you know that he's got issues. I mean, I think that back three was Evra, Avenging Angel, and Declan Rice, who wears number 47. So obviously it was always going to be difficult, but did you think West Ham hung in there? Were they a bit unlucky with some of the officiating, perhaps?
West Ham had a spell before halftime, 10 minutes, where they really got on top of Man City. They pushed everybody up and went for it and got success, got a goal and put them under pressure. The 75 minutes around that, it's the most one-sided football game I think I've seen, Gab. I came away and I spoke to another player and I said, Man City that good or West Ham that poor? And I think the conclusion was a little bit of both. I have to say Man City were fantastic. So I've seen Man City live a few times, but I could see why they've been so dominant. The way they stretched the game, the pace, the way they passed the ball was fantastic. But God, you know, West Ham just didn't lay a glove on them. I couldn't understand what West Ham were doing. They had a lack of pace in the team. They didn't get near them. And when they could have got near them, they didn't try. I think if you'd have seen Alan Shearer's comments last night, probably would have...
You eviscerated Chicharito?
Not so much. I think.
No. He absolutely destroyed.
He did, and he's probably.
In fact, we've seen.
Sorry, just
as a tangent on this, between Souness putting the boot into Granit Xhaka, and Alan Shearer and Chicharito, and I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm just wondering, compared to a few years ago, UX pros turned pundits. Are you a little bit more blunt towards your fellow footballers? I mean, are you now speaking the way you would speak to them if you saw a teammate do this on the training pitch? If you were Xhaka's teammate, would you have spoken to him after the game the way Souness spoke about him on television? And same thing with Shearer and Chicharito.
I don't think maybe after the game is the place. I think certainly during the game, those guys came from an era where words would have been said.
Hey, Johnny, have you noticed the shift a little bit? I welcome it. I think we should be able to speak our mind as long as it doesn't get personal, but... Shearer really seemed to be so upset by Chicharito out there. And I struggle to understand this too, because if you hear Chicharito talk, he's an intelligent guy. Everybody talks about how professional he is. We had Grant Wall here recently who devoted a whole chunk of his book to Chicharito and his intelligence, putting the team first. What's your take?
I think it is generational, as James said, that the football's changed and these guys are from an era where I think players are maybe held to account a bit more, held to account by their teammates, their coaches, and maybe the public. And you know, we are in a sort of world now where players, it does seem, can sail through entire careers almost without being particularly criticised and earn lots and lots of money. I'm not saying someone like Chicharito personally is like that, but I understand the frustration at seeing guys not do the basic things who have the stardom and the money that they do. Because I'm not sure if that did happen so much in previous eras, because dressing room dynamics and managers were different and people were called to account at the time. I mean, Souness looked like he wanted to physically get on the pitch and either play with or against Xhaka and teach him some kind of lesson there, but, and then, you know.
But has there been a shift in the pundits too? I mean, in the sense that I kind of feel like before they wouldn't violate the fraternity unless it was some guy that they would never run into ever again. Whereas now, they just seem so hard.
I think it is encouraged by the industry as well.
Right.
I mean, I think that if you look at how, let's say, the TV companies operate around their broadcasts, you know, they use social media to try and push everything their pundits say. And of course, what plays well, they think is hard comments. So, you know, you see the good old BBC doing this. If they can get some hard comments from their pundits, they'll fire that out all over Twitter and so on. So I think there's an encouragement from the industry to do that. But I think it's, as I say, it's principally a generation thing now, where guys who played 10, 15 years ago are just a little bit appalled by some of the standards of today's professionals.
And Johnny, you and I are probably the two biggest David Moyes fans in our industry. We just heard from Scully how it was one of the most one-sided games out there. It really did look as if some people either weren't trying, it was disjointed. Is this like a Moyes team? Because he's obviously managed bad teams in the past, but do you have any explanation, any insight?
Yeah.
Do you want to make some excuses for me?
I'm not going to make excuses. I mean, West, when they're bad, they're really, they're one of those teams that when they're bad, they're really bad, West Ham. I think a lot of it's to do with the way they've put together this very kind of old squad, which physically can't really hang in a game when it's not going well. And I suppose Moyes has contributed to that by bringing in Evra to add to the Zabaletas and all that sort of stuff. But he brought the improvement about by getting some intensity back into the players. And I think his problem is that when he then goes into a game like against Manchester City, where suddenly the game plan isn't about intensity, it's about sitting back, then that's just not going to work. It's probably quite a confusing sort of picture. I'm not saying he's confused the players with his tactics, but do you know what I mean? I think he's going away in that kind of game from what has actually brought success since he arrived. But you know, if you do open out against Manchester City, you're going to get killed. And had it been a little bit different, yeah, they might have somehow got to halftime level, and who knows.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Love the game? Then don't miss The Game Daily. It's your lunchtime update from football's finest writers, and it's only at thetimes.co.uk.
Liverpool have a huge semi-final coming up away to Roma. Obviously, the first leg really overshadowed in many ways by the attack on the supporter, on Liverpool supporter Sean Cox. That's an ongoing crime story. We think we all pray that nothing happens in the return leg on Wednesday on the pitch. Liverpool won 5-2, gave up two silly goals. We're not going to look back on that. We're going to try to look forward because on paper, again, there might be some insecurity about the fact that the last time Roma were three goals down from a first leg, they came and they beat Barcelona 3-0. So in some ways, maybe you feel a little less secure if you're a Liverpool fan than you would otherwise. But there's one other factor, too, which came out of the blue, which is Jurgen Klopp's assistant, in a story that was broken by our colleague Duncan Castles. Liverpool's assistant, Buvac, is gone. Now, Joycey, we got Paul Joyce on the line. You wrote about it this morning in the paper. What happened?
Well, officially, he will no longer be doing first-team duties between now and the end of the season. Officially, he's still a Liverpool employee, but it's very difficult to see how he can come back at the end of the season and resume his role. The timing of it's extraordinary, just a few days before Liverpool's biggest game of the season. It just seems that something must be really broken there, that the decision is taken now and they can't get through to the end of the season with him in place. The suggestion is that it's not so much a fallout between Klopp and Buvac, but equally, it's a significant blow to Klopp because, you know, this is a man who he describes as the brain, and he's worked alongside for the last 17 years since he took over as a coach at Mainz. So he's been there every step of the way. The success that they had at Dortmund, Buvac is central to all the training that Liverpool do. So at a key point in the season for him to, you know, move away from the first team and no longer to be around, that is a pretty extraordinary development, really.
For those who don't know, when you see the Liverpool bench during games, obviously Klopp is the guy everybody recognizes with the glasses. Yeah. Then there's the little creepy guy who tries to make himself look like a smaller version of Klopp. And who is that guy, by the way?
That's Cormier, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. But then most of all, Buvac is the guy with the jet black long hair is always kind of joined at the hip, as you mentioned, 17 years. Now, Liverpool put out a statement. I think clubs often choose their words very carefully. I'm assuming if it was some sort of, and I know we're in the realm of speculation, but hey, this is part of the job. If it was something where he had a personal issue or a family issue, the club would have said, he has a personal issue or a family issue, leave him alone. That's why he's no longer here, right? I mean, that would stand
Liverpool have said it's personal reasons.
Right, but in those situations, normally, I'm giving away secrets of the trade here, Joyce. When it's personal reasons, they might just say it's personal reasons, and then they would tell the media, you know, he's got an ill family member or whatever, and then we in the media kind of back off and just say it's personal reasons. We don't talk about it more. Like what happened with David Silva earlier this year, you know, they told us why. They said, don't talk about it. And then Silva obviously revealed it himself.
Yeah.
Johnny, I want to get you on this because obviously you've lived in Liverpool. You know the situation. I struggle to understand what would prompt somebody who has made football and coaching his life's work. And by the way, just to... If you're an assistant coach, unless maybe if you're Rui Faria, you are not a multimillionaire, especially if you weren't a great player, right? So this guy has devoted his life to Klopp and to working with him. There were former teammates as well. He's 180 minutes away from becoming European champion, 90 minutes away from going to Kiev to take on either Real Madrid or Bayern. He's got to know that walking away now is inevitable. I mean, it's got to be something serious, I guess, is what I'm driving at. Yeah. Something that he couldn't put up with anymore.
I think so. We are guessing a bit, but I mean, a couple of things to note. What, you know, one would be, if anyone should have a look at Rafi Honigstein's Twitter this morning, who's written the book about Klopp, but he points out that this pair have actually had quite a volatile relationship in the past. That's maybe been part of the creative tension in that relationship, that they have had, you know, confrontations, arguments. I spoke to Mats Hummels recently at Bayern, and he talked about working in Klopp's dressing room and as Klopp's, you know, sort of key lieutenant on the pitch, having stand-up rows with him in the dressing room. And this being part, I think, of the kind of environment, full-blooded environment that Klopp creates. So actually, if there's been a fallout, this must be a serious one because, as I say, fallouts are probably part of life to a certain extent in that in that environment, and people kind of, you know, as Hummels said, you got over it very, very quickly because that's how it was, and Jürgen didn't bear grudges. And this is a time that Steven Gerrard may be about to leave the club, and it's also a season where Pep Linders left the club. So all of a sudden, you've got a very changing kind of unstable situation in the back room, as at this point where, as Joyce said, that it's such a key part of the season, and it's hard to think of this instability as being a good thing at all for Liverpool's ambitions in the Champions League.
Joyce, before we let you go, 2 points. One is sometimes Johnny is so erudite and so knowledgeable that he assumes that everybody knows who he's talking about. I have no idea who Per Linders is. So if you can tell me who he is and why he's important, assuming you know, it's not just a name that Johnny made up on the spot.
Pep Linders was first team development coach who was a link between the first team and the academy, created a talent working group for players like Ben Woodburn, Trent Alexander-Arnold, that he would oversee their development and make the link between the academy and the first team smoother.
Okay.
He rechristened Buvac instead of the brain, he called him the human computer, which again gives you an illustration of how highly Buvach has been thought of and how integral to everything he's been. Pep Linders left earlier this season to go to NEC Nijmegen, I think, in Holland, and is with them now, and was a very highly regarded coach. I don't think Klopp really wanted to let him go, but the opportunity for him was such he wanted to go. So you could have Pep Linders has gone, Steven Gerrard could be leaving from the academy to go to Rangers, depending on how talks go. Buvach, personally, I don't see how he comes back, even though, you know, Liverpool are saying there's still that chance. So as Johnny said, there is instability there behind the scenes, and the head of physiotherapy, Andy Renshaw, left earlier in the season. So there's some key decisions looming for Liverpool.
Final question, just about the lineup on Wednesday. With so many injuries, especially in midfield, his hands are kind of tied. Is it safe to say that Robertson and Mane are fit, and so we'll probably see the same lineup that we saw in the first leg, with the exception, obviously, of Wijnaldum for Oxlade-Chamberlain?
Yeah, I think that's all he's got, really. And yeah, the midfield is, he's down to sort of last men standing there. It's Henderson, Milner and Wijnaldum, and it's quite interesting. You know, Johnny was at the game on Saturday against Stoke as well, and Henderson is a player who sort of polarises opinion a little bit and bears the brunt of a bit of criticism. But when he went down in the, I think it was the 44th minute, the hush around Anfield then was really noticeable. And that, in a way, was a backhanded compliment to Henderson, because he'd been exceptional in the first game against Roma. The challenge for him is to, you know, repeat that now in the second leg.
I want to touch upon relegation because, all right, I'm going to go through this at the top and you guys pay some attention, please. Nobody's been relegated yet. The points totals are, Brighton are on 37 points. They've got 3 games to go. West Ham and Huddersfield, they're on 35. They also have 3 games to go. Swansea on 33, 3 games to go. Southampton 32, 3 games to go. Stoke on 30, 2 games to go, and West Brom on 28, 2 games to go. Now, we could get some answers already next weekend. West Brom, if they fail to beat Spurs, they're down, and Stoke will go down if they achieve a worse result than Swansea. Stoke, of course, hosting Crystal Palace. Anybody want to argue that West Brom have a prayer? Okay. To be fair, given that Tottenham, given that Darren Moore's magic, they could, and given that Palace will be safe by the time they play them, West Brom could finish on 34 points. And as of right now, there are 3 other teams. But no, it seems extreme. Stoke, I think, is more interesting because I think they can beat Palace. I think, I'm not saying Palace are all going to be on the beach now, but Palace are basically safe. And that would set up quite the game at the end of the season where they would play Swansea away, where, you know, Swansea, a tricky run because they've got Bournemouth away, which, all right, actually, they'll probably beat Bournemouth, won't they, at this stage? That's what makes it so tricky, because there's all these teams that have nothing to play for, and you know when players go on the beach, right? Like, he's nodding. It doesn't just happen in certain leagues. It happens here too, doesn't it? Johnny?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, what kind of team is best to play against at this time of season? Well, it's surely the kind of fixture that West Ham have got next. It's against Leicester. It's against a mid-table team who have nothing to play for and actually are a little bit depressed at how the season's petering out. So, I mean, look, it's interesting. You speak to the managers, and from a long way out, managers have been saying to me, 36 points, that's what's needed. And it's... You hear that, and I don't know how they know, but they tend to know. these guys in the relegation fight, and I think 36 points will be the total, which is why Stoke's position is so interesting, because if they win the last two games, that's of course, you know, they will be on 36 points. And if you look at who Huddersfield have got next in their remaining three games, I'm not sure they'll get to 36.
Are you taking goal difference into account here?
You're right, Scott. You could have several teams on 36.
Because Stoke's goal difference is poor, isn't it? It's not.
It's poor. But I think Huddersfield may just be stuck on their points total, which means it'll then be down to Swansea and Southampton.
I think Huddersfield will get a point from one of their three games. I just think they will do. Yeah. I think Arsenal at home, they could get a point.
Huddersfield have Manchester City away with the guy obsessed with breaking records and showing West Ham no mercy. They have Chelsea away, who, for better or worse, until Chelsea play Liverpool, they need to win that game because they're still hoping for top four. Plus, for all we know, Spurs could lose tonight. I have Arsenal at home on the last day of the season, and
The Wenger send-off.
Huddersfield could make...
just works like that, doesn't it?
But what I'm saying is, obviously, we agree. You want to play the teams that are on the beach, right? But if I'm Huddersfield, I'm really sweating this because you could get no points. Brighton as well could, theoretically. Brighton have United at home, which, okay, maybe Mourinho doesn't care, but his players no doubt do. City away, same argument as before. You know, the Guardiola and his quest for 100. And Liverpool away in the last day of the season, where if Liverpool lose to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, which is entirely possible, Liverpool will need a point to finish top four. Even Brighton aren't safe. I mean, Southampton get two wins in their last three, which are Everton away. Boy,
there's too many teams below Brighton to
Brighton are pretty good.
You would have to be the most... If you were a Brighton player, you'd have to be so really unlucky. Looking at that list to get relegated.
So I'm gonna ask you two questions. I'm gonna start with you, Scully. So Johnny, think about it. We all agree West Brom are going down. What two other teams will go down, in your opinion? And what two teams would you love to see go down? And you know you can't say Manchester City or Liverpool, Scully, because they're not going down.
I'm gonna put my neck on the line and say the bottom three as it stands will go down.
So Stoke City and Southampton
will go down.
And who would you like to see? Who do you think deserves to go down?
It's a bit harsh, that.
Oh, come on. Teams who play crappy football, teams with managers you don't like, teams that have been lucky or dirty.
It'd be interesting if West Ham went down.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd like to see West Ham and Stoke go down, I presume. Yeah, he does. It's his vendetta against David Moyes for that year at Old Trafford when he messed United up forever. Johnny, which two teams will go down and who would you like to see go down?
Well, I think Huddersfield are going to drop in. I actually wanted Swansea might as well. So I think one of Stoke or Southampton is going to survive. I find it's quite hard to pick. I guess if I had to pick, I had to bet money on it, I'd bet on Southampton surviving.
If you look at Southampton, I'm looking at Southampton now. Everton away isn't an easy game.
Why?
No.
I just don't think it is.
Why?
I think Everton have got a bit of momentum at the moment. Sam's got the bit between his teeth. They're scoring goals.
Why does Sam even care at this point? He's done his job.
Listen, hear me out. Man City at home, okay, they're going for records. So they've got one huge cup final where Swansea away, which they have to win.
Yeah.
Have to win. Because a point just isn't going to do it. That's why I think Southampton are struggling.
So who do you think deserves to go down?
Well, I don't look at it on, you know, who's played nice or nasty football. I just look on who's good at giving you interviews. And Southampton have got a dreadful press office who are very hard to negotiate with.
Really?
Yeah, awful. Yeah, they don't even return your text messages or emails. You can't get them on the phone. So they can go. And I'm not too bothered about the other ones. I certainly don't want to see West Ham go down for obvious reasons. I haven't particularly enjoyed watching teams like, I guess, Watford of late, but they're safe. Huddersfield are kind of cute, but I'm not sure. I don't know. Southampton can go, and I'm not bothered about it.
Which I don't think they will do, because I think they're doing well at the moment. If Stoke beat Palace at the weekend, that then throws a major spanner into the works as well, because I think they could then go to Swansea.
Swansea are the team that worry me from their loss of momentum. You know, they were almost safe, and it's just petered out for them.
But they've got two home games, Jonathan, and I think at the Liberty Stadium, two home games.
The raucous Liberty Stadium. 20,000 Welshmen cheering on the Swans.
Yeah.
Swans, boy, that's what an intimidating creature.
I'll tell you what, West Ham. West Ham need to get something at Leicester at the weekend.
Yeah, but Leicester are
tailor-made.
Because West Ham, Manchester United, there's no love lost there. I see that now. And then Big Sam coming back to relegate West Ham.
Ooh, that would be so mean. All right, I personally, you know what? I like the Champions League. I like titles. But I love the intensity. I'm going to be so psyched I'm psyched that there is no title race this year. Obviously, I'll pay some attention to what happens to the top four finish. But the games I'm really looking forward to is I hope we get these sort of do or die Swansea Southampton, and of course Swansea Stoke. The drama, you got everything.
Come on, let's name your teams in. We know we got drama. That's stating the obvious. Three teams, go.
Who I think are going to go down?
Yes.
I think it's West Brom, Stoke, and Huddersfield. And I'll feel bad if Huddersfield go down but at that point, and you know what? I don't really care. As long as Aaron Moy gets another team. Chelsea keep their flimsy top four hopes alive by winning away at Swansea 1-0, with Giroud once again getting the nod ahead of Morata. Scully, is Conte's choice more down to Morata being bad right now or Giroud being good right now?
I think consistency-wise, he gets more from Giroud than what he gets from Morata. I think Morata can be certainly the more all-round player. But I think Giroud's just consistent. I think he knows what he gets with him. That's why he's going with him.
Percentage chance Chelsea finish top four?
20% chance.
Liverpool are held by Stoke as Salah uncharacteristically squanders a gilt-edged chance. But Johnny, we don't need to talk about this because... they didn't really care. They were all focused on Roma, and he rested everybody. Let's talk instead about Stevie G, potentially. It's weird because I say potentially. It looked like a nailed-on deal, and then today we heard from Paul Joyce, who said that, well, they're still talking and stuff, but the news would be Steven Gerrard would get his first senior job in management at Glasgow Rangers.
Well, I don't know if you've heard the joke going around that they want him because Steven Gerrard's the man that stops Brendan Rodgers winning leagues. But I really like Steven. And personally, I think it would be a really difficult job for him to start with. I think he can be a really good coach, and I just think he should think twice about it. Just because it's so difficult, Celtic are miles ahead of everyone at the moment. It's like they're like Bayern Munich now in Scotland. And Rangers are like, I guess, Dortmund. But Dortmund, with the pressure that they have to win, and expectation unrealistic. So, difficult.
But I suppose with Brendan leaving to take the Chelsea job, it could be all different next year. And Scott Brown taking over, you know.
Well, no, if maybe Stephen knows something about Brendan. If Brendan Rodgers wasn't there, then I think it is a good job. But at the moment, you're looking at a juggernaut of a team that's going for 9 in a row under Brendan, superior players, bigger income. It's so difficult. And would he get the time to develop in that role with that pressure?
Before people tweet me, I was joking about Scott Brown taking over as Celtic manager next year. I don't know the guy at all. Has he expressed any interest in managing at some point?
Not don't think so yet, but I think he will. I think Brendan will coax him on that journey. He likes doing that. I could see him managing.
Everton went away to Huddersfield, but Big Sam still has plenty of critics. But Wayne Rooney's not one of them, who says Allardyce is a great fit. Are you on board with Rooney, Scully? If you were Farhad Moshiri, who definitely owns Everton all by himself because he's got a lot of money, would you stick with Big Sam? Or would you say, you know what, you did your job, boom, done. Let's seriously plan here.
I think I would stick with Big Sam. I don't get the anti-Sam Allardyce at Everton. I don't. I can remember watching one
the
of David.
The fans really don't seem to like him. I know. If you're Farhad Moshiri, the fans are your customers, right?
Well, that's great. But if you then sack Sam and then appoint somebody else, and come November time,
like
you're in the same place, same position as what you were. at the beginning where they found themselves before they're putting this out, you've got bigger problems. And I think sometimes it's the stability. If you look at Sam's signings, Cenk Tosun seems to be a good centre forward. I think Theo Walcott was a sensible signing for Everton as well. Don't get it.
Big Sam's number one fan. Mauricio Pochettino's Spurs play tonight. But last week I kind of minimized it, but in the build-up, he was once again coy about his future. He talked about how the club's project wasn't going to change regardless about whether or not he was going to be there. He said, I'm not Sir Alex, and I'm not Arsene Wenger. And I'm like, yeah, you know, really? I hadn't noticed. But he said, you know, I'm not going to ask for a pay rise. I'm not going to ask for an extension. At the same time, there's reports that Spurs want to give him an extension. Tony, what do you make of this? Should my Tottenham supporting friends be concerned? Can you explain what the Poch is doing?
Yeah, they should possibly be concerned because of, two things. Real Madrid, we don't know what's going to happen with Zidane, but if he goes, Poch will be pretty much top of the list. I think he might want to keep that option open. He can't lose by bringing this up, and he brought this up voluntarily that I might not be the one that finishes this project. If you look at what he said this weekend, he talks about being bolder with transfers. So to me, it looks like he's sending a message to the board that if this project's going to continue with me, I need better transfers or bolder transfers. And the option's been kept open. See what happens in the summer, job-wise. I think it's kind of smart by him. You see managers do this. Capello did this beautifully with the FA several times. I just think it's one of these manager power plays which he doesn't feel he can lose out of. He either gets more money for transfers or the conditions are there for him to walk away.
Scully, your old club, Crystal Palace, one of many old clubs, are virtually safe. So it's time to tip our collective hats to Roy Hodgson, who took over a real-life disaster area. I think you were a little skeptical about Uncle Roy when he was appointed, although I think, like most, you said there's no way he's going to be worse than his predecessor. I'd like you to praise Roy, if you deem it appropriate, and also tell me again why every year it's the same old, same old, same old nonsense with the manager at that club.
I don't think it will be. I think there'll be some stability now at Crystal Palace. I hope so. I think Roy will certainly...
He's a young and up-and-coming manager who will no doubt stay
there. I think Roy's a perfect fit for Crystal Palace at the moment with where he is in his stage. I think he knows the game very well. He has done a good job. Listen, Crystal Palace got some good players, Gab. They've got a high wage bill. They've got a lot of experience in their team.
You say they have some good players. They have some very good midfielders. But if you look at, you know, Loftus-Cheek missing so much of the season, and you see when he's fit what he can do, you look at the injuries they had at the back, you look at the fact that Benteke, I think, has scored only a couple goals more than you did this season, and you've been retired for a while now, you know, having to reinvent Zaha up front with freaking Andros Townsend, that's quite an achievement, especially given the negativity of the way they started.
Yeah, the start, though, but three of the games were under Roy. So they had seven games where they didn't win, they didn't score a goal. Four were under De Boer, three were under...
I know, and they had the whole preseason under De Boer, and so they were all... I mean, I don't know. I just think it was a smart appointment.
It's a sensible appointment.
By Parrish.
Yeah.
There you go.
Your friend.
Our friend. Darren Moore does it again. If the season began in April, West Brom would be in the Champions League spots or thereabouts. Johnny, to what do you attribute the turnaround? Or is it just God no longer needing to punish the club for employing Alan Pardew?
Well, I think there's an art to sacking managers in a relegation fight. And you're talking about Crystal Palace. They've done it several times. They've got experience of it. They kind of know who they're looking for and when to do it. Swansea are the same. I think West Brom just made the decision too late that it wasn't working with Pardew. He probably should have had a shorter reign, funnily enough. Maybe Stoke did it too late to bring Lambert in. Darren Moore fits what West Brom are about, and he's so loved. He's such a kind of rallying figure that they're definitely getting at least that short-term benefit of I don't know, identity being restored, or however you want to put it. If they'd done it earlier, maybe they'd survive.
I know when he was appointed, I think it was Jusko, he just talked about how big he was, but there's a wonderful story. I retweeted it. It's from the local paper. I guess it's the Express and Star. He talked about sort of playing football under an underpass and how he always wanted to be a cricketer, I suppose, because of his background.
My tweet, I think you did there.
Oh, I retweeted your tweet. There you go. He always wanted to be a cricketer. And then And then he saw, I guess, Laurie Cunningham play and said, no, hey, how about I go do that? I know.
He's a really good guy. I played against Darren a lot in my career, and he was awful to play. He's so big and strong, aggressive, but off the field, a real good guy, good human being. And he's probably given West Brom a bit of a problem now, haven't they? Do they carry on with him, or do they look for someone else? Gab, one for you. Serie A was the last title race in Europe, but I guess that's no longer the case.
No, and it was incredibly dramatic Saturday night. Juventus, 1-point lead over Napoli, the momentum all with Napoli. They went to play Inter Milan, absolutely wild game. Juventus scored first, then Inter Milan had a player sent off with the help of VAR, Matias Vecino. You can see Mario Mandzukic afterwards, he tweeted the gash on his ankle. Fearsome stuff, 10 stitches. Controversially, Miralem Pjanic was not sent off for what should have been a second yellow. Pretty grotesque decision. Everybody infuriated. Plucky Inter Milan with 10 men, they equalize, and then they take the lead. They go 2-1 up, and it looks like they're going to do it. And the title's heading to Napoli, and then Juve scored twice. One goal with a deflection in the last 3 minutes. And then it was compounded the next day with Napoli losing in Florence. And the lead is now 4 points, and you don't see how Juve can let this slip away. Juve really are the cat with 99 lives. What I will say about Juve, though, is they are not playing well, and they're kind of backing into this title. But they all count, and it would be 7 in a row for them if they pull it off.
Hi there, and welcome to the Sweeper, which is the Times' fantasy football tips service, and quite a weekend it was for us, wasn't it? I'm Charlie Scott, with Paddy Bombear, as ever.
Hello.
Yeah, so do send Tadic, Paddy, talk to me, because when you put that in the email, I wasn't sure where you were coming from.
Well, I was just quite keen on the idea that Southampton need points and clearly have a better squad than their position in the league reflects. We've been banging on about Charlie Austin for a few weeks now, but Tadic is a class player. You know, he can pop up with goals occasionally, and maybe a bit of back-to-the-wall stuff might inspire him. And what do you know? A brace and 15 points this week.
Can't argue with that.
Hopefully a few people listened.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So Tadic was the top-scoring player in Fantasy Premier League land so far. Obviously, Tottenham are playing Watford this evening. Another person who we bigged up, and we have been doing for some time since his return from injury, is Wilfried Zaha. 14 points for him, as Palace were just sensational.
Yeah, again, another team who need points, and playing against the Leicester side with nothing left to play for, really, and it showed that sort of thing happens at this time of year. And in the last couple of weeks, it's definitely worth looking out for those who need points, because they're going to be trying a lot harder to get them.
Definitely. And who else?
Well, at the top of the table, it's all about City again, isn't it? It looks like they're going to keep picking a strong team. They're going to be going for records. They've got an incredibly easy double game week coming up. So my first advice this week would be, as many City players as you can get, find them. Specifically, I guess Sterling and Jesus are probably the two safest options. And if you've got your triple captainship left, they're going to be candidates for that, I think.
Double game week 37 coming up. 5 of the top 6 are playing. Obviously, I think the standout two teams in terms of their fixtures are Spurs and City, but where would you be looking?
I think those two. Those are the best places to go. Obviously, as I mentioned, Southampton have got a lot to play for, and they've got two games, two fairly friendly ones. So again, Tadic or Charlie Austin, someone like that could be useful. The one thing you might want to think about this week is actually selling Mohamed Salah, finally.
Already have.
Have you? Liverpool have only got one game. It's Chelsea away. It's obviously a risk selling him, but if it means you can get someone like Eriksen or Sterling with two fixtures, the point scoring potential is so much bigger there that it could be worth finally doing that.
Definitely. And I think a lot of people have been saving up the triple captain for this double game week. Where's yours going?
It's probably going to go to Kane.
I'm going to see what he does against Watford tonight and then base my decision on that. Looking further ahead, we sent out in Friday's email our latest competition question, the price of which is quite special, isn't it, Paddy?
Yeah, we've got two free tickets to this exclusive Times Plus World Cup preview event, and the guests are definitely worth listening to.
Yeah, so Tony Cascarino, the former Ireland striker, who's a Times columnist, will be joined by Alison Rad, Matt Dickinson, and a special guest who we can reveal as being Roy Hodgson, the former England manager. So if you want to be in the running for that, then make sure you sign up for the Sweeper at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball. And this week's email will have the question repeated. All you've got to do is send in the answer, and you could be there speaking to Roy about all things England and Crystal Palace, if you're of that persuasion.
many, many, many thanks to my excellent guests today, James Scowcroft here in the studio, and Jonathan Northcroft. That's plenty of Crofts for you. In fact, our producer Charlie made a joke about Crofts, which is a dog show here in England. I'm glad he keeps his day job. Remember, just £8 for an 8-week trial. You can search Times online and you will get our excellent content. At least I think it's excellent. And you can access highlights of every single game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, and the FA Cup as well. We're going to be back next Monday. It's Chelsea versus Liverpool. It's the penultimate weekend of the Premier League, and it's Arsene Wenger's final game at the Emirates.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.